Welcome to Ooh History, Naughty Boy, with me, Hugh Kennard, and my glorious chum, Dougie. Dougie, say hello.
Oh, it's so nice to hear your voice, Hugh. I mean, I thought I'd lost you.
Yeah, the story about me being trapped on a cruise boat on the way to see Taylor Swift with the twins, that was actually quite erroneous.
Oh, but hang on, but you told me, and I took that intel on good faith you were adrift in the sea.
Yeah, well, you got that from a text message, didn't you, from my phone?
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Yes.
Well, so I went to that Heart Foundation charity shop because Jeremy Tanhelm. Do you know him?
Tanhelm.
Much too tall.
Oh, he's enormous, isn't he?
Enormous.
And yet his feet are tiny.
Tiny feet. Yeah. I mean, he looks like he skips. When he walks.
It doesn't tally, does it?
No.
Those feet and that height.
No, hardly touches the floor. Nice. Well, he was working in the ex-architect, you know. He was working in that Heart Foundation shop, and he said there were some good books in, and then invited me around so that I could check the back room, you know, the room
right.
full of the bin bags and the Nescafe Instant. And
yes.
And so I went back, and their books weren't that good. And I went out to tell Jeremy I didn't think they were that good, and the door seemed to have stuck. And I'd left my phone in the car with the twins, I banged on the door, but nobody came. And so I was stuck in the back room of the Heart Foundation I think 3 days.
So you're telling me that rather than... Did you even go to see Taylor Swift?
I don't know who he is.
Hang on, have I been made a fool of? Is it one of the twins was texting me saying that you were adrift in some broken ferry?
And it wasn't just you. I mean, they went through my phone. They texted all of my friends. They told Edith Pingo that I'd lost one of my legs in an accident with a Citroen.
You see, and that's very dangerous because if anyone's got loose lips, it's Edith. I mean, I'm sure the whole town knew by the end of the day.
Well, exactly. But also, they found some text messages that I'd shared with my friend Cynthia. They sort of got the wrong end of the stick and showed it to Helena, her indoors. And she's no longer indoors. She's outdoors now because it appears she's decided that she'd rather spend time with Jeremy Tanhelm, the tall man. And so she's staying with him for a while. I'm still in the house. It's fine. I mean, unfortunately, the twins used the phone to employ a builder to put an extension above the garage.
Well, are you back in the main body of the property or are you still in the garage?
Well, I've grown quite attached to the garage, to be honest. But now that there's no roof on it, I've had to move back into the spare room with the plants.
But isn't that that's a step up, isn't it?
Yeah, it would be if Helena was there as well. What are we doing this week?
Well, partner, we are going to the wild, wild west, aren't we?
Yeehaw!
That's right. We're going to be talking about, you know him as Buffalo Bill. But, of course, that's not his real name. He has a proper name. And I'm very excited because I don't know much about him. And I know a little bit about the Wild West, but of course the prism with which I view the Wild West is you know, Sergio Leone films, John Ford westerns, you know, it's...
William Smith movies, obviously, because that's where I learned that you actually pronounce it the Wild Wild West, see?
Well, that was the thing about William Smith, wasn't it? I mean, he is documented for being a charismatic lead, you know, fellow ethnic puncher, and yet they don't talk about his wonderful historical acumen, do they?
Never. I don't understand why not. Let me tell you about Buffalo Bill then, shall I?
Go on. Well, you start. I'll put my guns outside the saloon, and I'm gonna mosey up to the bar, order myself some fire water, settle in, kick back, and listen to you shoot away.
So, Buffalo Bill wasn't actually named Buffalo Bill by his parents, although his Auntie Frances used to get him confused and call him Bicentonian Cow Jeffrey later in life when she was She was a little damaged. So Buffy's father worked at the Kickapoo Indian Agency, which I don't think is an instruction. I think it's just the name of the place. And he seemed to be quite a nice chap as he gave a speech against slavery.
Oh, that's good, because, I mean, not enough people were doing that at that point, were they? What are we, for the benefit of our listeners, what are we talking here? 18, what was it?
I think he was in his 20s, perhaps his 30s.
Okay, and what about the time period?
It was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay, so 1600s.
No. Sorry, early evening, 1800s, late
1800s. Yeah. Late 1800s. Okay. Now we're zeroing in for target practice. So this was what, the 1860s, 18 something.
Yeah, like? Quarter past six. Yeah, about that.
Fine.
So, Buffy's dad. I mean, as you know, unfortunately, nice chaps in the Wild West, much as now in America, were seen as evil, left-leaning, liberal scumbags. For being nice, and so he was stabbed. And this meant that poor young Buffy had to go to work, okay? So at 11, Buffy left home to herd cattle. Buffy, he dressed as a border collie and pretend to be a sheepdog, and it was around this time he was known as Bitch Andrew. But after a run-in with an over-affectionate Irish setter named Big Woof, he quit that because it was painful. He then worked as a driver on the wagon trains, but this work dried up as cars hadn't been invented. However, he did manage to cross the Great Plains many times in his younger years. When he crossed the average plains, that it's all right, but it's not the Great Plains now, is it? And some of Hertfordshire. Okay? So already we can hear the legend starting of the great Buffy Bill.
I mean, what was his proper name? What was his birth name? What was his name?
William Cody.
Right. You see, now I'm glad we got it out there because we didn't mention it, and some people are inevitably going to tweet us saying, you know, like they normally do, oh, you think you know so much about history, but you don't even mention the details. It's like, well, listen to me at bus stop 64. Now we're mentioning the details. That's his name, William Cody.
Willie Coldy. Okay. Willie Coldy.
Case closed.
Yeah.
Now, if you don't mind, Hugh's going to drop some more fact bombs on your metaphorical Dresden. Go for it.
So William Cody, or Buffy, then tried fur trapping, which is when you do your flies up much too fast, and gold mining, which is a lot more profitable than dirt mining because it's easy to find, but a lot easier than shoe mining because there aren't many underground. Then there was the period in his teens when he was vampire slaying, but this has been covered in other media and we don't need to go into it here. He then joined an early version of the Pony Express, which, much like courier services today, meant he'd leave packages from Superdrug with a neighbour and double park his horse wherever he damn well pleased. Now, he once rode, this is another part of the legend, he once rode 300 miles without sleep for 22 hours.
That's rubbish. That's rubbish. I've done that. Do you remember that time I took the family up to Inverness because they wanted to see Loch Ness, and there was a terrible accident on the M1, somewhere near Chesterfield, I think it was, around about Junction 19 or something. And we were crawling along, and I hadn't slept because I'd had a bilious attack the night before because of too much ribeye. And I hadn't slept for 24, 25 hours, and there I was, green to the gills, in the Hyundai, straight up the M1. I mean, I don't know quite why this is seen as some sort of incredible achievement.
Dougie, were you actually driving the Hyundai?
Well, no, absolutely not. My wife was. But I was doing some pretty aggressive staring.
And you were riding in it, weren't you?
Yeah, I was in it, yes. But I was still driving in the car. I just wasn't doing the driving. Point is, we made it, but I consider myself pretty, pretty traumatised by the whole experience, you know?
Perhaps one day there'll be a legend of Dougie and how he was able to go elsewhere over a long period of time with a woman he didn't trust in a car. So following the Pony Express and travelling about a bit, he then got involved in the Civil War, okay? He was very civil during the Civil War and always used his manners and held doors open, and even for people that walk really slowly and, you know, don't say thank you after you've held it open. He also fought the Kiowa and the Comanche, which was less civil, really, because they were the Native Americans who people were willing to be very uncivil with. You'll notice in the Civil War, it was basically about what the national headwear of the these new United States of America would be wearing.
Oh, that's an interesting angle. What do you mean?
Well, did they want the cowboy hat or the baseball cap, you see?
Well, I see. Well, that's the crux of the entire conflict, isn't it?
Well, exactly. And although the baseball cap won, the cowboy hat's still very popular in the southern states, except in sportswear. So with the victory of the baseball cap, he then got a job providing food for railway workers. And here we go. This is the point when he was called Buffalo Bill. Now, during this period, he worked alongside Baguette Bob, French Fry Frankie and Starbucks Buck. And he claimed to have butchered, here comes another part of the legend, 4,280 buffalo in 18 months.
Why?
So that he could feed these people who were making railways. Well, I think the Chinese, actually, but they haven't really mentioned that. Do the Chinese eat buffalo?
Well, the vegetarian ones don't.
No, I suppose they don't, do they? I wonder if he got any black bean. He could have been Black Bean Bill.
Well, he could have been all sorts of things. He could have been Jerusalem Artichoke Bill, for all we care. I mean, at the end of the day, I guess that was the stock in trade, and that's what they wanted to eat. I mean, if you've been on the railroad the whole day, you'd probably want to tuck into a nice buffalo steak, wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah. Or a buffalo wing, which is actually not a wing from
which
buffalo.
Which is a chicken.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Or some nice Italian cheese, in which case he could have been called Bufala Bill, which would have been quite interesting, wouldn't it?
So in those 18 months, funnily enough, I mean, he killed 4,280 buffalo, while Starbucks Buck, he only completed the stamps on 3 Starbucks loyalty cards.
Well, that's a shame, isn't it? Because, you know, he was so close.
Now, it's worth noting that Starbucks Buck was not quite as damaging to the Native Americans by consuming caramel lattes, as at this time there was a policy to get the Native Americans out of the way, you see? And one clear method was the eradication of the buffalo, which they fed to the Chinese. Now, the Native Americans were really good friends with the buffalo, and they, you know, they kept them as pets, and they had buffalo flaps in their wigwams and mess tray for the poop. And so, as they slowly started, rather quickly started killing buffalo, the Native Americans were desperately unhappy. I mean, imagine if you saw, like, a Chinese man eating your pet dog or something. It's kind of like that.
Is that really what they did? I mean, I'm a little aware that we have had letters saying that sometimes we can be a little racially insensitive. And to say that the Chinese just eat dog, that's a red flag in terms of our lawyer, who I can't get hold of. I'm sorry, I meant to tell you. I don't know where he is. I last heard that he was in Lee Delamere's services arguing over a Whopper. Why he told me that, I have no idea. And I don't know what the legal ramifications are for him or us about that altercation. Point is, I don't know where he is, and I just want to make sure we're not saying that the Chinese only eat dog.
I didn't say the Chinese only eat dog. I was saying if they ate your pet much as they ate the pet buffalo of the Native Americans. I'm very racially aware. In fact, I get called a snowflake often.
No, you used dog.
I didn't
use all the animals.
I haven't used a dog for many years, and that was just a vicious rumour started by Edith Pingu.
Well, she said you were blind, didn't she?
Well, yeah, and that's why I stumbled inside that dog, but I didn't mean to.
The point is, other animals are available for the Chinese to eat. I think that probably covers us legally, doesn't it?
Yeah, probably. And they don't use bits of animal for their penises. Just in case you were going to bring that up, because I've read about that.
I haven't read about that. Tell me a bit more about that.
Well, I think, like, just like we use pepper, they have rhino horn graters. And they sprinkle it on their food of whatever variety they are having. And they believe that it will help their penises float larger.
Float? Well, hang on. You can't get rhino in China.
No, they have to send away for it. Probably Amazon.
Oh, now it all comes together. Well, I think for the purpose of covering our own rhino horn legally, I should say that there were lots of animals for the Chinese to eat. But due to the nature of this specific analogy, Hugh chose a dog. But it's arbitrary. Okay?
Thank you, thank you. We're a bit off topic, I think, actually, aren't we?
Off topic.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So Buffy thought wiping out the Native Americans just by killing buffalo was a little bit slow, so he joined the army as a scout, okay?
Hang on, he joined the army as a scout? Yeah. Why didn't he just join the scouts?
No. No, army scouts are different. They don't sell cookies or wear woggles. They just go ahead and go, there's something over here.
Oh, snitches.
Kind of like snitches. That's a type of bird, isn't it?
No, that's a snitcher. That's someone who watches birds is known as a snitcher.
That's a tweeter.
No, that's a twitcher.
Oh,
a tweeter's a tweeter's one of those trolls that keeps telling us we're not historically accurate. So there's tweeters, there's twitchers, there's snitchers, there's scouts.
So while he was scouting, he came across a Cheyenne war party.
I've not been to one of those.
No, it's not a party, Dougie. Despite all the whooping, it's not actually a party, just like he wasn't really a Boy Scout, okay? I know that these words can be confusing, but some words have more than one meaning.
I'm back on track, sorry. Carry on.
So Buffy changed into some velvet pants and a red shirt and with silver buttons on and led a squad to attack them. I'm not really... I think it'll become clear why he changed into some velvet pants with a red shirt and silver buttons on, but I'll come to that in a sec. Now, he killed one warrior named Hay or Why.
Isn't that a lovely book fair? Isn't it a book festival in Hay on Why?
Oh, yes, it could be. Maybe
I think I went
that.
There for a signing. I went there for a signing because that chap who wrote that book about...
Glenn Felcher.
Glenn Felcher, yes. I went to see a Q&A with Glenn Felcher. And, of course, Felcher being Felcher didn't turn up. He sent an understudy. And that might work in theatre, but it doesn't work at a book signing. You don't have a book signed by someone else.
Yeah,
anyway,
just somebody who wrote the footnotes.
Well, it wasn't even that. It was just someone that knew him. I think it was his neighbour. Anyway, reluctantly, I got this man's signature on Felcher's book. I've stashed the book in the archive. But the point is, I was at Hay on Wye.
Can I borrow that book?
No.
Oh.
Anyway, sorry, I interrupted. But, you know, so he was at Hay on Wye.
Yeah.
And he slaughtered some Cheyenne warriors.
Yeah, that'll do. Buffy then scalped Yellowhair and he shouted, "First scalp for Custer!" But nobody actually remembers him saying that. This is another part of the legend, except for one chap who thought he'd actually shouted, "I like skin on custard." So following this, Buffy quit the army, and this is where he started a stage show when he'd wear his velvet pants and a red shirt and wave the scalp of Yellowhair while shouting, "The first scalp for custard!" So, around this time, he met a writer named Ned Buntline, who was a dime novelist, meaning he'd write whole stories on the side of a coin to make a visit to the opticians more enjoyable. And then Ned, he loved Buffalo Bill, or Buffy, and started moving from dimes to whole dollar bills, then magazines. And then finally he wrote a play called The Scouts of Prairie, starring Buffalo Bill and Texas Jack Omohundro. And Buffalo Bill proved to be quite an engaging performer, actually, a cross between Lulu and Bill Nighy, I understand. And the show was an immediate hit, and thus started the legend of Buffy Bill.
I mean, it's been a fascinating build-up to essentially the showmanship side. I mean, should I talk a little bit about that? Because
are you capable?
My background in amateur theatre means that this was something I was naturally interested in, and while I wasn't so interested in the man's life up until he trod the boards, this is something that I am actually well versed in.
Well, your skill at Eightbourne and garden-based comedy has always chilled me to the bone.
Well, that was the one review I got when the local Amdram Society reenacted a key episode of The Good Life. I remember that it just said, chilling. Chilling. 2 stars. He was a natural showman, as you've teased. I mean, he wasn't a great actor. You know, that was the interesting thing. No, I know. Some said his facial hair did a lot of the heavy lifting when he was on stage. And he had magnificent facial hair, as if you care to Google image Buffalo Bill, you'll see. If you find the Buffalo Bill when you Google image without any facial hair, then that's the terrifying serial killer James Gunn from the film Silence of the Lambs. And it's very important you don't get those two mixed up. Although Buffalo Bill probably killed more people. But there you are.
He did it without tucking parts of himself into parts of himself, though, didn't he?
Well, exactly, and dancing to that song, which I really like. I often, when no one's around, I often get in my little sort of, you know, kimono and put that song on. Anyway, Buffalo Bill was a natural showman like P.T. Barnum, Freddie Mercury or Bradley Walsh. In fact, the Bradley Walsh connection is rather significant because there was talk back as early as 1872 for Cody, old, you know, Buffy, to present a prototype version of the hit show Gladiators that we all know and love. But he said no. For two reasons. One, he didn't approve of women in Lycra, but mainly because television hadn't been invented. Like the problem he had with the cars that you mentioned. He seems to have been thwarted in life by things not being invented yet. As you said, Cody, the legend, has taken hold by this point, and Buffy is seen as being the man who invented the Wild West show, which is this largely theatrical extravaganza for all the family. But you might not know this. It was actually a theme that he settled on largely through trial and error.
Did he try something else first, did he?
He tried several things first, but they didn't take. And I did some research, and I'll run you through a few of them now, if you like. I mean, we've already touched on the aborted Gladiators fiasco, but there were other several explorations. 1875, there was Wild Bill and the Chimp of Death, which actually toured five states before the chimp ripped the face off a horse, who then kicked a pig to death that was being ridden by the chimp's wife, who fell off and burst. It was a senseless, deeply ironic waste of life. Really was. And the chimp was destroyed. Sorry, no, I've read that wrong. The chimp was distraught.
I don't like to see a weeping chimp. I hate to see a weeping chimp.
A blubbing bonobo.
Mm.
1877, just 2 years later, Wild Bill got back on the horse for his next show, Wild Bill and the Goblet of Fire. It ended in 17 deaths due to conflagration of the entire tent. And Cody was on record as saying, thank God it was only a children's matinee. A year later, 1878, Wild Bill and the Chocolate Factory, which premiered in Lexington, Kentucky, and lasted a record 37 minutes before he was sued by the owner of the local chocolate factory, a man who went by the name of Mild Bill, and he'd already trademarked his own show. The fact that Wild Bill had not heard of Mild Bill was irrelevant. Mild had beaten Wild to the post, and apparently Cody also didn't have any chocolate. Not because it hadn't been invented, it had, he just didn't think to bring any. 1880, Cody travelled to Dublin for inspiration, and he met a young Oscar Wilde, which was interesting, and the two of them joined forces for an experimental show called Wild Wild West. But it turns out American audiences, they just weren't ready, Hugh, for a 7-hour epic involving one man sitting in a deck chair reading out witty one-liners and then performing what were deemed, sadly, acts of gross indecency.
Yeah, I don't think the world was really ready for gay cowboys until sort of the 90s, really, weren't they?
Well, absolutely, with the Brokeback Lozenge or whatever it was called.
Yes, exactly.
You know, Backtrack Hill.
Cool, you can really hurt your knees in a tent doing things like that.
Oh, especially with that rough floor that they get nowadays. But this closed after 4 days. And we all know this bigotry, and it is bigotry, Hugh. It's a reflection of the times. And this sort of thing would, of course, be welcomed with open arms in any West End theatre now. But his natural flair for showing off proved inexhaustible. And in 1883, Cody cracked the formula with his Wild West show. It was spectacular. I'm going to take you through what you would witness if you went to Buffalo Bill's Wild Wild West show.
How exciting.
Are you ready?
Can I have a lolly and some candy floss?
Absolutely. Help yourself. Knock yourself
Big
out.
Bucket of Coca-Cola.
Yes, you can have that too, but be mindful you might need a toilet break. So this was a feast for the senses. It was a 4-hour outdoor entertainment extravaganza, as I said, and it featured a cast of hundreds. You had fancy shooting, hard-riding cowboys doing rope tricks, like tying reef knots and stuff, which is probably the scout influence. You had yelling Native Americans, recreations of a buffalo hunt, hopefully not ending with 4,000 buffaloes being slaughtered before tea. So there were dodgems. There was Pin the Chimp on the Ouija board, which I think was a hangover from the Chimp of Death. Maybe it was trying to communicate to the chimp that was lost.
Did it only have the one letter? Oh.
I think so.
Ooh.
Oh.
Ooh.
Yeah. So you couldn't really ascertain anything other than whether or not they were alive. Or dead. I don't know. I haven't used a Ouija board since that school trip. So there was Pin the Chimp on the Ouija board and Nude Frolf. But it doesn't say any more about what that is. Frisbee golf, I think it is. Why they were nude, I have no idea. Animals included that you could expect to see. Buffalo, naturally. Elk, bear, moose, deer, seals, otters, voles and a Sasquatch. Stars included Annie Oakley, the famous rifle shot. Annie got your gun, and she performed all her stunts, did Annie Oakley, wearing stylish wraparound snowboard sunglasses. 1885, Chief Sitting Bull joined the cast, where he just sat on a bull for half an hour, and it was worse than it sounds. But of course, it was a huge hit, and he travelled with this. It was a touring roadshow, and it toured annually. In 1886, Cody and his theatrical manager, Nate Salisbury, as we know, entered into a partnership with Evelyn Booth, a big game hunter and scion of the aristocratic Booth family. And it was at this time, Hugh, that Buffalo Bill's Cowboy Band was organised. It was a band directed by William Sweeney, a cornetto player, who served as leader of the Cowboy Band from 1883 until 1913, so they had a good old run. Sweeney handled all of the musical arrangements and wrote a majority of the music performed by the Cowboy Band, but he insisted on playing extensive solos through an ice cream cone, which is better than it sounds. In 1887, this is exciting, the show played at Queen Victoria's Golden Jubilee and was staged throughout Europe. Victoria loved it. She saw it three times, the greedy little piggy. And in that year, while she was over, in 1888... Cody tried to get Jack the Ripper to turn up, but the notorious serial killer refused, saying it's all very well murdering women on the streets of Whitechapel, but frankly, being cruel to a small horse was, well, for him, beyond the pale.
Inhuman.
Yes, exactly. After London, it played Birmingham and Salford near Manchester, where it stayed for 5 months. Apparently, it's largely responsible for the Victorian Madchester scene of the late 1880s, early 90s. 1890, Cody met Pope Leo XIII, who he mistook for a lion and tried to tame with a whip and a chair, which was embarrassing for everyone, really.
That happens a lot to the popes, though, doesn't it?
Well, especially, yes, it does. And frankly, I think some of them are into it. You know, I mean, they've all got a kink by definition. And if that's what you're into, whips and manes and drooling and buckets, then, you know. More power to you. Just keep it behind Vatican doors, you know. Where was I? Oh, yes, that's right. Yes, so that same year, Buffalo Bill further embarrassed himself when he met some Italian butteri, which is a less well-known sort of Italian equivalent of cowboys, and they perform all their tricks nude except for chaps and lathered in butter.
Buttery batter?
Yes, very much so.
I see. Is that why they call butteri?
Yeah, that's exactly why they called
Buttery.
I see. You see? Bill, of course, he'd had a few by this point when he met them. And he said his men were more skilled at roping calves and performing other similar actions with or without fatty lubrication. And so a group of Buffalo Bill's men challenged 9 Buttery, which was led by a man called Augusto Imperiali, at Prati di Castello in Rome, as opposed to Prati di Castello, you know, in Toxteth, which is a lovely Italian takeaway. You know, here's a funny thing. In 1893, 3 million people attended the show, which by this point was known as Buffalo Bill's Wild Western Congress of Rough Riders of the World.
That's about a bloody big poster to fit all that on.
Yeah, I know. I know. I think they used one of the... They probably turned it from portrait to landscape, and that was the problem solved.
Oh, clever.
And he added Cossacks and Vagueros at this point.
What's a Vaguero?
I don't know, but it is vague.
Oh, is that what they are? And they're just vague people. What do you do? And then they're just vague about it.
Yeah, they're very vague about it, and that's probably their whole centrepiece. But he held it next to the official grounds of the World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago, which is as baffling as it sounds. You know, well, here we go. Behind the end of the 19th century, Buffalo Bill was one of the most recognised persons in the world. But it was not without controversy. Several cast members died over the years on stage. But it was a different time, Hugh. There was no health and safety. They were all Native Americans. I have some names here. Hold on. I have to write this one down because they're complicated names to remember. Hold on. Here we are. Surrounded by the enemy, of the Ogallala Lakota band. He died of a lung infection, and his remains are buried at Brompton Cemetery in London. You can go and visit Old Surrounded by the Enemy if you want. Paul Eagle Star of the Brulé Lakota band. He died in Sheffield while watching the snooker at the Crucible and got a cue ball lodged in his throat.
Oh.
I know. What a way to go.
Is the cue ball a white one?
Yes.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yes, yeah, so yet again suppressed by the white man.
Yeah, Reardon's a bugger, isn't he? Reardon can be a bugger.
Isn't he? Well, I think it was Dennis Taylor.
Oh. Well, you know, with those upside-down glasses, you can't trust
exactly.
him. You can't trust him.
It's like an upside-down cross. Yeah. It's an invitation for Satan, isn't
it? Yeah, or was his face upside down and his glasses were the right way round?
Well, we'll never know. His secret died with him. Mm. Then there was Long Wolf, again of the Ogallala Lakota band. He died when he was attacked by a really long wolf, which was ironic. Then there was White Star Ghost Dog. He died of boredom. I think he'd been benched. Then there was Armpit of the South Wind, who blew away and was last seen sailing through the clouds above Rotherham. Running with the Devil, he died of an over-energetic guitar solo. And Strictly Come Dancing, whose leg fell off during an otherwise flawless American Smooth. Now, we're coming to the end of Bill's life. He continued to perform as long as he could with his Wild West show until 1916, so just after dinner. At the age of 71, he often had to be helped onto his horse backstage. And, you know, the exhibition remained extremely popular around the world. However, he made some terrible investments, you know, Hugh, you know, like, including the purchase of an unproductive gold mine. Turned out it didn't have any gold in it. And he lost all the fortune he made in show business. And his last public appearance occurred just 2 months before his death in 1917. And
what a sad and inglorious ending for such a bewhiskered chap.
Exactly, you know, and we wouldn't have so many things that we take for granted without Buffalo Bill's glorious Wild West show, or indeed his simplification of frontier living.
And genocide.
And genocide.
With magnificent moustaches.
Yes, and I think the moustaches probably outweigh the genocide, which I think is a shame. I want to get on record saying that I think that's a shame.
I think you're probably right there, actually. Wiping out entire races and cultures just because you have an enormous moustache is a bad thing, isn't it?
It doesn't give you the right to do anything. I mean, facial hair is arbitrary. You can shave it off. It could have been fake, you know?
Unless you're a lady.
Well, yes. And we must always think of ladies.
So
that's it. Well, that's Bill for you. I hope he it's one of our lesser requested topics, but I think that people will be surprised by what we dug up.
We didn't dig anyone up in Brompton Cemetery, did we?
No, we're not allowed back in there. You remember that when you tried to do that satanic rite?
Well, it was a bachelor party, wasn't it?
Yes, and one of the more memorable ones. So there you go. That's it, really. That's Buffalo Bill. That's the Wild West show. I hope you enjoyed it. Let us know on the social medias if you did. Also, let us know how relieved you are that Hugh's back with us. It doesn't matter whether he was on a ferry or locked up in a store cupboard.
It did smell of, like, dead old ladies in that store cupboard, though.
Well, I mean, that's on you, isn't it?
Well, I didn't kill them.
So until next time, I have been, as ever, Douglas Rattle.
I'm Hugh Kennard.
And we look forward to, to speaking at you soon. So all the best. Take care.
Until next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
History for You with Douglas and Hugh was created, performed, written, produced by Adrian McKinder and James Devonshire, with music by Mike Jones. You can find us on social media. Of course, we're on X, formerly known as Twitter, at History for You Pod. That's the number 4, the letter U. You can also find us on Facebook, which is a History for You Podcast. Follow us, give us a like, drop us a suggestion if you can think of anything you'd like to hear us cover. We're more than happy to oblige, as we've done in the past. Don't forget, there's a whole raft of back episodes to listen to wherever you get your podcasts. So check them out if you haven't done so already. And thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.